we're back. Surprise! We're not giving you what you thought. Again, we break our promises because what else is new? But no, we, like the rest of the movie viewing and television viewing world, were taken by surprise on Super Bowl Sunday when the Patriots lost, but that's not even what I'm referring to.
There's a movie event that jumped into our lives.
Grabbed us.
We watched the movie that night. We talked about podcasting today, and we got to go through with it.
Yeah, so we're doing the Cloverfield Paradox?
The Cloverfield Paradox.
What a name.
It's literal.
You think?
It's literal
you
meaning.
Think? So well, yeah, the Cloverfield Paradox, we're going to sneak in a surprise movie event podcast for you guys, going to try to handle it in the same sort of way we did The Last Jedi for Star Wars. Also wanted to give you a little bit of a current events pod before we go diving right back into all the Oscar categories. So we figured we'd give you guys this little bit of a respite, kind of cleanse your palate a bit after the Oscar sprint profiles.
Oh, it's got to do that. All these elite movies by all these bougie filmmakers, and then we get this movie.
Mike has feelings about this movie, which apparently we're going to get through, but let's introduce you the way we always do. This is Mike, Mike, and Oscar. I am your host, Mike. This is my co-host, also Mike.
I'm the also one?
Dude, we can switch.
Yeah, can I be number one for a
it's
day?
It's a very fungible franchise we have.
No, I'm second billing. I am the Watson to your Holmes.
Yeah, that's it. That's what we're going for. And the Cloverfield Paradox. I'm going to get that title wrong. I know it, but that's what we're reviewing today. This is going to be a kind of a Hollywood hot takes episode, but more focus on the Cloverfield. The majority of this is going to be on the movie Cloverfield Paradox, but we're going to kind of walk you through what led us into doing this episode, more so than just the Super Bowl commercial.
It's a beautiful hot mess, not unlike ourselves.
Pretty much an adequate way of describing it. You should really be doing this intro for how succinct you're being right now.
I got the easy job.
Rambling like a madman, per usual. But first, you want to get us on social media. Again, we're talking about relevant topics, current event topics. We love hearing back from you guys, getting your takes on them. We are Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Facebook, Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Instagram, MMO_pod on Twitter, Mike, Mike, and Oscar at gmail.com, and we are Mike, Mike, and Oscar on Reddit. And that 30-day clock is counting down. We're going to be putting up something soon on the starting our own posts on Reddit over there and causing mayhem, and then eventually
we got some we got some projects cooking right now. We actually got a team meeting after this pod where we're gonna keep thinking about some stuff.
It was Mike, me, Rich Paul, LeBron James' agent,
and Oscar. This guy named Oscar
and the trash can.
Shut up, Oscar!
He's always making so much noise. He's
always messing.
It's almost his time to shine, though. We're about a month away, a little less than a month now from Oscar Sunday, and so like I said, after this episode, to cleanse your palate and kind of make you guys hopefully giggle a little bit and not take everything so seriously, we'll be getting right back into the Oscar categories and the deep dives therein. The reason we agreed to do this podcast in the first place and covering the Cloverfield Paradox. All right. The Cloverfield Paradox is that it was a surprise. It was sprung on us during Super Bowl Sunday, during the commercials, that Netflix has the Cloverfield property, which had gone through this whole ballet and this whole dance of this release schedule that was quite amorphous for such a long time, as all the Cloverfield properties pretty much have been up to that point, though previous to, I should say. And then, oops, it's coming out after the Super Bowl on Netflix. Go watch it now. Yay!
Great cast. A movie that's been, rumored to
ballyhooed.
Be a Paramount.
Very ballyhooed.
Paramount was going to release at this point, going to release at that point. Titles were thrown around. There was some news that Netflix was sniffing around at the end of January, which I'll get into in a brief production profile. So it was like the fourth or fifth trailer amongst the group, and we have kind of a rapid-fire kind of reaction thing we're going to do now for all the trailers. So Mike,
yeah, so prior to diving into the Cloverfield movie itself, which is coming up in this episode, we wanted to give you kind of a hot take, bing, 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 of all the trailers that we saw during the Super Bowl, because, you know, only 120 million people in this country and worldwide viewed this thing. So we wanted to give you our takes of what we saw in the trailers, what we're excited about, what was disappointing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We got a list of, I think you said, 6 or 7.
I can't count.
All right, so 4. and we're going to just go through them right now. So they're in an order that also Mike put together, so they're important to him. We're going to start Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom.
It looked much better than the first one. I didn't like the running from the volcano in the first episode, first trailer. I think that's a giant raptor. Is that that the new big bad? It's just the giant raptor because it looks like a giant raptor.
That
anyway.
Has a thing for little girls' bedrooms,
I guess. Yeah, and they're remaking The Lost World. I mean, they're basically remaking the first trilogy.
Yeah, I got it. I'm not, I mean, to me, I got the Harry and Slimy Tonto vibes from it between Blue and Chris Pratt.
I like that he's running, you know...
With the devil.
No. I like that he's rolling out of the jaws of the T-Rex, which is kind of cool.
How inaccurate are T-Rex with their bites in this Jurassic universe?
Pretty inaccurate, but scary.
They miss at everything they bite at, they miss.
I like the little Jeff Goldblum.
It's like a stormtrooper with a laser pistol.
The Jeff Goldblum Jeep commercial.
That was funny. I do agree.
But how about you? Jurassic World? You into it?
Not so much. Scared. I hope it does well. I love Chris Pratt. I'll get perked up every time I hear that chord. You want to play that slowly on a piano?
Great score.
I'll get hard as a... No.
Oh, my God.
But I get that my ears perk up every time. I love Chris Pratt.
I wish Chris Pratt would just go full Steve Irwin Crocodile Hunter for this role, because that's what he's doing.
So you want to take the Danny McBride Dundee character and put him in the Jurassic World?
Yeah. Yeah, right? I mean, just pretty much but more Steve Irwin. I'm going to tickle this raptor right under that chin. Come here, raptor.
That's your Irwin, huh?
I had the same Irwin. Impression for everybody.
Irwin after he smoked for 25 years.
I have to quit. Anyway, Skyscraper, Mike, The Rock.
It's not just The Rock.
And the Skyscraper.
Did you happen to see who The Rock's wife is in this one?
Nev Campbell.
Goddamn right, Nev Campbell. Nev Campbell is married to The Rock in a Die Hard for the New Generation. It's like somebody went back to 2003, Mike, and asked him to pitch them a blockbuster. We got Rock, Nev Campbell, big explosion, tall building. Boom.
Listen, the ingredients sound good to me. However, I mean, they're kind of dropping all the pretenses here. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
I'm sorry, you want subtext in a skyscraper titled movie?
For years, it's been like, all right, let's make Die Hard on a boat. Let's make Die Hard on a plane. Let's, you know, get off my plane. Let's make a parody of Die Hard in a mall with a fat guy. Let's make, put The Rock in a Die Hard during an earthquake. Now we have just, all right, let's remake Die Hard with The Rock.
Yeah. Well, why not?
Okay. I'm just saying that's what it is. That's fine.
He's got a fake leg. He's not exactly John McClane.
No.
He's playing a paraplegic there.
I also wonder here if it's official that I've now seen too many movies. Like, does this, the movie,
Is this Hollywood being out of ideas? Is this Hollywood's last idea?
Is this going to throw me over the edge? Am I only going to watch foreign films and documentaries for 2 years after watching this movie? Like, is this going to do it for me? Like, can I never go see a blockbuster
again?
Did
you happen to see the Skyscraper poster and the Mission Impossible 6 poster? And how they're both essentially the same poster. It's just the star of the movie off in the distance on a very long drop down to the ground.
Even scarier, Mike, what if I like it? That's
going to. Well, I can guarantee you that right now. That movie's going to be entertaining as hell.
Every single shot is a cliche from the trailers. That's the problem.
I don't like how you're talking about this like it's a problem.
It's definitely a problem. And he's jumping off. I don't know. I hope so.
What if he doesn't make the jump, Mike?
I like the one piece of suspense that he might fall with his fake leg. Yeah. I don't know. This might be the one to push me over the edge. That's all I'm saying. I'm a little worried.
I love how you have a problem with this, but like Rampage is coming out sooner than this.
I'm not going to see Rampage.
You haven't said a word negatively about it.
I'm not going to see Rampage.
Which, by the way, is Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom just with a monkey.
Right. However, there is a blockbuster that seemed to tickle our collective fancy here.
Tickle's not the word.
Mission Impossible 6 Fallout. I am in for this movie.
I'll leave the jokes about a 50-plus-year-old Tom Cruise running and jumping to others who enjoy low-hanging fruit as much as I do. For all my progressivism, and I truly do believe, and I've spoken as much in this podcast, the easiest way to discern that I am still a stereotypically Caucasian male is to show me a preview for a new Mission Impossible movie with Tom Cruise. I get so fucking hyped up and get so ready to. I am in. I don't care what the plot. I don't know what the. I haven't known what the plot is for the last 7 movies, but I'm in.
There's Alec Baldwin.
Ving Rhames is still alive.
He's still alive.
Both
and well.
In real life and in that universe. He's still alive. Not just selling ADT.
he's still alive and well. I mean, I love the stash on Superman.
Beautiful. I'm so happy.
I love how they speed up his punches, which makes it look so much more macho.
Two major studios fighting over whether Superman, should the character of Superman have a superimposed upper lip, or should the bad guy, the second bad guy in the Mission Impossible 6,
look,
have a fake lip?
This stash is so incredible. They should have just gave Superman the stash. What were they thinking? Like, he should have just been like, all right, I'm not going to go full Superman. I'm going to have a stash. I'm going to wear black. I mean, that Justice League would have jumped up like five points for
you're
me.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong. We're excited. Irrationally excited.
Here's the thing. This trailer also, like, told a story. Like, I know you said you don't know what the story is, probably because you're just like, rah!
I just can't. All my blood is flowing to my erection.
But he's got this thing with his ex-wife, ex-girlfriend, where he's facing off with her. They got this stuff with the CIA, with Superman.
Okay. Tell me a plot. What's going on? Other than people wanting to find
plutonium involved in this. I was waiting for Dr. Strangelove to come out at some point. And one of these trailers, by the way.
I will say.
The Doomsday Device or Cloverfield Paradox.
Right, yes, of course.
For that matter.
The song, the Imagine Dragons song that they put in as 16 years later, because I think this first sequel came out in 2002, I want to say, the first Mission Impossible sequel, to have Imagine Dragons put a spin on the Mission Impossible theme and step in the shoes that Fred Durst so capably filled 15 years
ago. That's true.
By having one of the
best. That was a bad Mission Impossible movie.
First of all, bite your tongue.
No, that doesn't exist. John Woo.
Second of all,
that was the bad one.
That song was hot, though. That song was a banger. So
they had the Metallica song with it. That soundtrack was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a big deal for us.
It was. So, irrational excitement over here for Mission Impossible 17 or whatever.
I'm in. Ghost Protocol was one of my favorite movies of that year. I like the last one. I'm in.
You could describe the plot point for me for any of the last five movies. I would have no idea what it is.
No.
Avengers Infinity War was also on the docket here, and this is Marvel's first crescendo, let's say. What'd you think?
I'm still in. I like the longer trailer better. But they showed all the heroes. I mean, I get kind of more curious now about who are these lizard people?
Fair.
Where do the lizard people come from? Mm-hmm. Did Thanos have to conquer the lizard people to make them like lizard people army men?
Is it an allegory
Why
for the
in God's
Illuminati?
Name? Maybe. Why in God's name, when they have all the super spaceships and all the artillery on Wakanda there, why are they doing, a battle on foot? Does that make any sense? So I want the Russo brothers to explain, but listen, Marvel's got a ton of credo built up, street cred. I'm in.
I had one takeaway from this trailer, and it was they went a little darker on the shade of purple with Thanos this time.
Okay, good.
And I was okay because I was part of the outrage too. The first time they showed in the first Infinity War trailer, like, why is they making slightly purple Joss Whedon the bad guy? Because that's what Thanos looked like. And now they went a little darker, and maybe they go a little darker, and I'll be on. But yeah, how can you not? Give me a prediction right now, opening weekend number for ticket sales for that movie.
Prediction? Opening weekend ticket sales?
So we know Black Panther has set the record for most pre-sale tickets.
Pre-sale tickets. So, well, I think it's going to make 130, 120, something like that.
Talking
that
about
weekend.
Like the best.
But does it come out on a Wednesday or does it come out on a Friday? That's the question. If it comes out on a Wednesday, it'll probably make 140, 150, something like that.
I think 150 would be the high
for all time. For a Wednesday opening. To Sunday?
I think so. I should have looked that up before asking the question.
Everything's bumping up with the prices. So
and inflation especially becoming a problem in the
plus
major
Black
economy.
Panther's going to hype everybody up and set up this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Black Panther might set that record. Black, come close to it.
Yeah, I'm with you on board. Hyped up beyond belief for Infinity War. Spider-Man with his mask off in space. Not sure how that's going to get pulled off.
It's Guardians of the Galaxy out there with him. Yeah, I'm in. So A Quiet Place, Mike. The full trailer is. I've seen it too many times. It's in that danger zone for me because I went to too many movies.
You mean The Office does Geely?
The Office does Geely. Now, why does that kid have a loud spaceship toy? When they can't make any noise? Why would he think that's okay in any universe?
Why would you open a door? Why would anybody open any door?
Why would they leave the house trek?
These are all
somewhere.
Questions I'm going to need answered. I'm with you. I'm excited. I like John Krasinski. This whole metamorphosis that he's going under, coming from Jim Halpert to like 13 hours buff John Krasinski. Is it Krasinski? Or is that the name of the kid from Jerry Maguire?
It's Krasinski.
What was the kid from Jerry Maguire?
I can't believe your brain went there. I have no idea what the kid's name from Jerry Maguire is. Wait, what was the, you know, fourth lead, male lead in that
Jonathan
romantic...
Lipnicki. Is Lipnicki. Kid from,
oh, yeah, sure, right, sure, so yeah. You're a sane person. Great.
Oh, give me a home. No, I am excited for A Quiet Place. I always think it is fascinating, and this is a total, this is the soft side of me, but to see the on-screen chemistry between these Hollywood couples, because I've always sort of bought into that Bill Simmons theory. You can tell that I listened to him way too much out throughout my life. He always had a theory that new fame always ends up in a relationship with other fame because they're still people and they're still impressed with, wow, I can date Jessica Simpson, was his example for Tony Romo, or I can date Emily Blunt. I can date John Krasinski, you know. So I'm interested to see, you know, Ben Affleck. I could date Jennifer Lopez. I'm interested to see the on-screen chemistry between those two, just to see from that side to see.
They've been married for a while, I guess, right?
They have. It's not a new couple per se, but I think it is their first time on the big screen together.
It's possible.
So I'm excited in that realm. What about you?
I thought that was a stupid trailer. Like, why pick the most inexplicable part of the movie? This giant spaceship toy that the little kid, I mean, these kids wreak havoc. I mean, these monsters come for the kids every time. The kids play Monopoly in the other trailer, knock over the lamp.
One big subtext for bachelorhood.
I mean, get control of these kids.
Don't have children.
Or just not play fun and games all the time. You know, you gotta stay away from the monsters, maybe.
Have you ever turned down a game of Monopoly?
I mean, these kids are out in the world just going on walks. Yeah, you're right. Like, can we, that, you know, the first trailer, she's just like on a walk. Okay. It's immediately
in
right
fall,
there.
Nonetheless, you can like crunch on a leaf and yeah, oh.
Immediately right there. Like, what WTF is going on? Yeah, just bring it. That's me. That's Peter Griffin with the bag of chips.
And you're dead. Interesting. A lot of explaining to do. We'll go next to Red Sparrow.
I'm in.
I'm sure for no misogynistic or sexual reasons.
Look, I can be attracted to Jennifer Lawrence without being a misogynist. All right, come on.
I'm very interested to see her pull off that accent for 2 hours.
Yeah, she'll do. She'll be fine. I don't care what it gets on Rotten Tomatoes either. I'm saying it.
You have no problem with Red Sparrow based solely on Jennifer Lawrence being an attractive female, but you'll draw the line at Skyscraper because The Rock can't possibly jump that distance.
Every woman's going to see Magic Mike. I'm going to see Red Sparrow. I'm sorry.
Oh, look at you. Playing the Magic Mike card.
Yeah, I'm
playing
the Magic Mike card.
Doesn't even go for 50 Shades whatever.
They're all going to say 50 Shades whatever. What is it called?
I think it's called 50 Shades Cash Grab.
Yeah. They're all going to see that. So I can go see Red Sparrow. I want to see it. Spies fighting.
Yeah, like the spy idea. Jennifer Lawrence is a fabulous actor. She's probably my favorite going right now. You're going to sexualize her. I mean, it's going to be hard to say no to.
Solo, A Star Wars Story. So, yeah, what do you think, Mike?
If I had a sound effect of teeth chattering or me biting my nails, I would play it. I'm very, very cautious about this movie. It doesn't look great. At least not from what I saw in that trailer.
Yeah, it's not a great impression of Harrison Ford. Now, I guess it's better that he's not going for the impression if he can't do it.
Well, you can't. I don't think nobody can do it. Yeah, I don't think you can do it regardless. I don't think that's what is going to sell. I think the big selling point of that trailer was Lando anyway, so I think that's okay.
That fur coat is blown away.
Oh, that fur coat is magnificent. If I could have that to wear around town Wednesday, I would.
It looks like Star Wars. I like the interplay with the Empire there.
Am I crazy, or one of those control panel, one of the first shots of the close-up of a control panel that like a stormtrooper standing at just kind of like flimmed? I don't know. I thought it looked cardboardy. I don't know. Maybe it's in my own head.
I think it's in your own head, too. Droids. Great wig on Woody Harrelson.
You and the goddamn
the lounge man. Singer with the, you know, the gold dress.
Yes, yes. You're not
Lando
worried.
Lando in a fur coat.
You're
Chewy.
Not worried.
No, I'm a little worried, but you know, doing the Tokyo Drift on the speeder.
Yeah,
it's kind of cool. I don't know.
I have high hopes.
They built up a lot of street cred. This would be the movie I predict they'd screw up, though.
Is Ron Howard capable of screwing up?
He'll give you something strong. Yeah, I don't know. I think he'll give you something strong.
Has he screwed up any nothing I can think of?
Da Vinci Codes are not great.
They're entertaining, at least I thought. I mean, they're not.
They're not really adaptable. I mean, it's kind of a weird movie to adapt.
It's definitely tough.
That's a terrible wig, by the way, with Tom Hanks.
We're going to have to just put... Might even just the word wig on a t-shirt.
Good wigs, good movies.
Yeah, that's the equation. Hollywood, we figured it out.
Trying to come up with catchphrases.
They're not all winners. Reality sucks is out of here, buddy. Good wigs, good movies is in. And the last one, which was the one we saved specifically for last, the Cloverfield Paradox. In lieu of going deep into that preview that we saw on Super Bowl Sunday, consider this the official start of our Oscar-esque review of Cloverfield Paradox. Mike is going to start us off with a production profile.
Yeah, I mean, the film was in development at Paramount since 2012. It was originally entitled The God Particle before it had any known connection with the Cloverfield franchise.
Now, which I think is one of the biggest takeaways from this is that this was originally made as a standalone property.
10 Cloverfield Lane was kind of the same deal. It was entitled, like, The Cellar. So they kind of, like, tacked in all the Cloverfield connections. I think they did the same thing here. Oren Uziel, the writer of Shimmer Lake, a very good Netflix original movie, you know, was the one that did the Memento kind of screenplay.
Yeah, we covered that in our episode 9. Mike had the review of that one during our
quick. As Netflix movies go, yeah, it was a strong movie. So he was involved as the writer. And yeah, this was something that J.J. Abrams' production company Bad Robot produced. The film was shot in Los Angeles from June to September in 2016, and they've kind of been searching where to release it. Not good signs going out into the...
They have danced with this release date for about 6 months already.
In late January of this year, it was rumored that Netflix was interested in buying the film rights in a similar deal that it made with Annihilation. Now, Annihilation is going to come out in American theaters on international Netflix. At the same simultaneously, I think, but or maybe staggered a little bit, but and that's what it's doing.
Let's clear that up too, because it's awfully tough to give information about what Netflix plans to do, because Netflix, much like Apple, is very close to the vest with essentially all their information.
Right,
they don't let the cat out of the bag in terms of content, viewer numbers, money. They don't talk about any of it to the public. So it's tough to say Netflix is planning on doing this. Netflix, and part of why it's so tough is so they can do things like this.
But what did you think of this? Released. This was kind of fun, right? I mean, during the middle of the game, we realized there's a movie event that night, and I was all lacquered up. So I think I was ready for a movie event that night. It was a good game. I was having fun. I wasn't sleepy.
It's something that I can't remember ever being done before. And never. I don't know that we've had the tools to do it before anyway. So it's not like a big budget blockbuster can say, oh, by the way, I'm coming out without the medium that is a streaming service such as Netflix or Hulu or Amazon. So it's definitely a new age for movie marketing in general. Do you think the hype helped or hurt the movie? The shock of it being a quick release like this?
I heard somebody give an online review. I forget who it is. Jeremy something. And he's like,
Jeremy Johns?
Jeremy Johns, I think. Yeah, he's a big name. And he's like, well, I look forward to this movie for a whole hour and a half. And, you know, so yeah, I mean, it's there's positives and negatives. I think, like you said, we're going to get into a little bit in spoilers where we say some of the negatives. But positives were I wanted to turn on my Netflix after the game. I did turn on my Netflix after the game.
It's bizarre to me because Beyonce kind of set this template. When she released one of her albums, she did it with no warning, no marketing. She just said, listen, after the MTV Awards or the Grammys or something to that event, she just said, here's a new album, all new content, go and get it. And it set iTunes on fire. And iTunes had the bandwidth and capability to handle that.
Yeah.
Obviously, Netflix did the same for what this did. But it's think about the world we're living in now. This was a valued property for lay fans, for lay people. It's not like a big Oscar critical darling. It's a horror, thriller, sci-fi property that has a base following already, and it's an anticipated sequel, if nothing else, I would say.
I mean, two prequels to it, did well with the critics, did well at the box office. So we expected this movie to surprise us, number one, because they've been very hush-hush about the marketing, very hush-hush about the name of the movie, the cast. Basically, it was just like untitled Cloverfield movie in the IMDb, what's coming out. There's some news about the untitled Cloverfield movie being looked at by Netflix last month we saw. So yeah, there's not a lot of information about it. So that's another tip of the cap to J.J. Abrams, ultimate setup master.
He actually tipped his cap, by the way. So that's a man that knows what he's talking about. I wouldn't expect this from many other studio heads slash directors slash content creators, etc., etc. J.J. Abrams, it feels right, even though he's not directly attached outside of an EP or a producer role, it feels right that he's the one to kind of dip his toe in first into this water. Did it work is something we're going to talk about.
Yeah,
did they just get you to watch? Were the motivations behind it is something we're going
to
talk about.
Did they just get you to watch a crappy movie? I mean, then we're going to get there. Now, the last thing is, you know, the J.J. Abrams shared universe with Super 8, Cloverfield, 10 Cloverfield Lane. I don't know if there's another movie of Abrams.
I think all of Lost took place in this universe.
But the gas station.
This is purgatory.
The gas station Kelvins at the beginning of Super 8, at the beginning of Cloverfield Paradox, the very beginning.
See, you can't remember the title either.
Yeah, it's the same. Well, it was thrust on me those 2 years ago.
It's been in our lexicon for 72 hours.
Yeah, so same gas station, so that everybody was mentioning that. Now, I don't know. I think this is a good cast. It was led by
strong
Gugu Mbatha-Raw. That is her name. Gugu is short for her full name. 41 credits IMDb. She's perhaps best known for Belle, Beyond the Lights, Concussion, Free State of Jones, Miss Sloan, and this year's Beauty and the Beast. Also in a lot of TV, including Touch, Undercovers, Doctor Who, the Black Mirror, San Junipero episode. She did a nice job in this.
Strong catalog for her.
Yeah,
a lot of big productions.
Yeah, major supporting roles in some big movies, and she's kind of starting to bust out a little bit. Also stars Daniel Brühl from Inglourious Basterds, Captain America, Civil War, Rush, Goodbye Lenin, and Joyeux Noël.
No, you got through that beautifully.
Yeah, Brühl plays the German physicist Schmidt. David Oyelowo plays Kiel, the ship's captain. He's best known from Selma, playing Martin Luther King. Nightingale, Queen of Cotway, United Kingdom, The Butler, and The Help.
Did you see Selma?
Yeah, I saw Selma.
I should have. I wanted to, but I never got around to
it. Solid. You know, his performance is very strong. A bit controversial, some of the stuff they show. Like, they show Martin Luther King's secret affairs and whatnot. And
oh, really?
They put that into the lexicon. I thought that was intense. Chris O'Dowd. O'Dowd.
Say that one more time.
Chris O'Dowd from Girls, Family Tree, Bridesmaids, The Incredible Jessica James.
Yeah, the Irish cop from Bridesmaids.
He plays Mundy, which is the comic relief name of the cast in the Cloverfield Paradox.
Shout out to Nick Mundy, who we both love.
Zhang Ziyi plays Tam. Zhang is known from Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Memoirs of a Geisha.
Memories of a Geyser.
Hero and the Grand Master. I'm just reading. What? I don't think anybody screwed this up.
It's not racism. It's illiteracy.
It's illiteracy. John Ortiz, Pat's friend from Silver Linings Playbook. And if that doesn't get greenlit soon, I mean, did they film that in the press box the other day?
I think that was, the sequel.
Pat Celentano got in
the... He became that character. He is... Like, he was angry, he was happy. He was from
Philly, yeah. I guess he is. So
he's just a really committed method actor, even 5 years after the movie came out.
Yeah, right. John Ortiz has also been in American Gangster, Kong, Skull Island, and Alien vs. Predator. He plays a character called Monk. So they got the single, monosyllabic names.
Yeah, they're not going deep into
for the crew of a ship in outer space when the aliens come, they're ready for it.
Hamilton Monk.
Elizabeth Debicki plays a young Tilda Swinton in this movie. She's also from Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2, The Great Gatsby, The Man from U.N.C.L.E. She's the mysterious character of the movie, Jensen. Axel Henny and Roger Davies also star, and they're in some of the weirder scenes of this film, which is saying a lot.
The whole movie is weird scenes.
Directed by Julius Ona, who's done The Girl is in Trouble and a bunch of short films. He's got the upcoming Luce, coming out next year.
Yeah, this is only his second feature-length directorial effort.
Written, as I said, by Oren Uziel, the writer-director of Shimmer Lake, which was a Netflix original movie of the past year that I kind of liked, as I said. He's also written, go figure, 22 Jump Street, Freaks of Nature, and the upcoming Mortal Kombat. So he's got an eclectic, you know, IMDb there.
I'll be over here for the next couple minutes.
Yeah, that was a great song back when we were kids. Come on.
I love that song.
You didn't go nuts for that song back in the day? So, Mikey, you got some specs.
Yeah, I don't have much because unlike our Oscar Sprint profiles, this movie, again, was just sprung at us and has only been in existence for a couple hours. Written, as Mike just told you, by Oren Uziel and Doug Jung, based on Uziel's story, he of 22 Jump Street fame, directed by Julius Ona, only his second feature-length directorial job since 2014's The Girl Is in Trouble, a 102-minute runtime distributed by Netflix, has a listed budget, and the only reason we know this is because it was not a Netflix property to begin with, a listed budget of $26 million. Had it not been for a first glimpse of Solo or Dundee stealing the shine of the Super Bowl buzz, this probably would have been the big story of the movie advertisement world seen through the game. Unfortunately, its reception has been less than stellar. It's got a 6.0 IMDb rating on 15,000 plus reviews, a disappointing 22% Rotten Tomato critic score, albeit on only 59 reviews thus far, but 46 of those being negative. Has an average critic score on Rotten Tomatoes of 4.6 out of 10. It fares better with the audience score, netting a 58% rating on 5,700 plus reviews, average audience score of 3.3 out of 5. Now, as we've alluded to a couple times.
High audience score, though.
Yeah, it goes out to a 6 out of 10. We're in the middle of that 50-60 range. As we alluded to and we've said, this had release date polka. It was all over the map. You know, it was going to be released in last October.
Bad omens.
It was
going
to be released in February. Then we were told it was going to be released April 20th of this year. And then we were told it was going to be released February 7th of this year. But we haven't seen any production or any marketing for it. And then here it is, Super Bowl Sunday. Go watch it.
It's a trendsetter in a way with that marketing plan. But what kind of movie is it?
So,
that's what we're going to talk about.
Yeah. Being what it is, released how it was, your expectations, you only had an hour or so, as Jeremy Johns alluded to form an expectation. What was it?
If they laid it out traditional way and we saw the Rotten Tomatoes score that you just cited, we're probably not too excited about it. We'd probably never see it. But this movie just thrust upon us, oh my God, new Cloverfield movie. Cloverfield with Matt Reeves was awesome.
I love John Goodman.
Yeah, 10 Cloverfield Lane was some of my like top 10 mm-hmm. of that year. Oh my God, I gotta watch it. It's like this claustrophobic premise. It's Alien meets Evil Dead meets whatever the hell's going on here. Gotta watch it, right? Black Mirror episode on, you know, more budget.
I was like you. I ate up the expectations of, oh my God, this is a genius stroke by Netflix and J.J. Abrams and everybody. This is a new field for marketing and new movies and the new age. And
trailer looked good.
It did.
Great cast.
But again, if we had enough time to digest the trailer, it was a bit misleading, right? It wasn't exactly about what we were shown it was about. So maybe it benefited from, you know, not only did it benefit from being sprung on everyone, maybe it benefited by having a misleading trailer and building up hype. And we don't have the requisite time and expectation disappointment to say, well, I was screwed by that trailer. I was misled. I was deceived. So this could be a new thing.
So the question I'm going to ask throughout this review, is this movie awesomely bad?
I feel like I like it more than you do.
I feel like I might really like it if I get some answers to some of these questions, and if I like what I hear, I might really enjoy this movie because it's nuts. It's completely effing bonkers. It's bonkers.
So let's set the premise of the plot, or at least
bonkers,
or at least attempt to. There are a group of astronauts that go on this space station, the Shepard.
Because of an energy crisis that's causing World War three times a thousand.
Earth is on the brink of World War whatever. There's not enough energy to sustain life. There's 8 billion people on Earth. These people on the spaceship of the Shepard are supposed to do this thing with this particle to harvest energy.
Break space-time somehow.
Right. And they end up fracturing the space-time continuum.
And shit goes down.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay, that's the premise we're working
with. Which is fun. You got a great cast.
That's like taking like your trash can and just like throwing it into your front lawn and seeing what happens.
It's Lovecraftian. It's
dystopian.
Dystopian. It's paying homage to those movies, like I said, Alien and Evil Dead. It's paying homage
and
to
what
other
the budget
Cloverfield
surprised
movies.
Me. There's so many nods to Evil Dead, Alien, Lost, even I saw with right. the Not Penny Ship promo with the hand on the glass and the hand on the other. There were so many nods, and for a budget that's $26 million, which is not an insignificant amount, you don't really expect an homage picture.
Right. I wonder if it was better than Life, because I didn't see Life.
I didn't
year.
Either, and I saw critics making the comparison, and I saw people arguing on both sides of it. I saw people arguing that how could you say this was better than Life, and I saw people outraged at thinking that Life was better than this. I think this is going to end up, at the end of the day, as a polarizing movie, and I think that's how this review is actually going to go between you and me.
So they're going on a save the world mission, not unlike Armageddon or Sunshine.
Don't
so the,
wanna close my eyes.
You have a beautiful voice.
Thank you. And I look directly into Mike's
so they're going. Yeah, they're going on a save the world mission.
Yes.
And the husband tells the wife in the first scene when they're stuck at the gas station, basically that she needed to go on a save the world mission.
I cannot defend this dialogue. I can defend some plot points. I don't know that I can defend a lot of the dialogue.
Baby, I'm just worried about if you don't go, what's going to happen to the whole world?
To this place. You mean Manhattan? Nah. Earth.
It's another thing where, you know, and this is a joke by another guy who's been in trouble lately, but he said on Opie and Anthony back in the day that there's no such thing as a reluctant astronaut. There's no such thing. There's no such thing as an astronaut who says, oh, this is my fallback career. This was his problem with gravity. Like, you can't just, oh, she's wondering whether or not she should go to space on the Save the World mission, the most important mission in the history of humanity. No, the 0.00 times 101% is going to go on that mission. The most elite of the elite, not the person with family baggage.
Here's how I think this review is going to go. I think this review is going to go, you're just going to start picking out things you hated, and when you get to something I can defend, I'll defend it. But that, again, well, that's a hell of a point.
But here's what I'm doing throughout this. I'm kind of laughing with the movie because it's so absurd. Like, he's just like, oh, baby, you gotta go.
It doesn't take itself seriously at parts either. Yeah. It is. I mean, it's a serious movie. It's a sci-fi. It's a thriller. But it does also... Look, I'm going to spoil one part of it. One of the main characters loses a limb.
Right,
but
in
it's
the
not done. It's not done in a all for a serious movie. It's not done in a serious way. It's like, oh, my limb's gone now.
So I guess the transition into production values, that's perfect. So visual effects were probably the best thing about this movie.
Yeah, I thought they were well done. Well done. I mean, maybe you could
they
see
might
where
have
the majority
overshot
of the budget
it.
Went. Yeah,
they might have overshot it at the very end. But the goods for sci-fi horror and body horror and kind of delivered. I mean, I'm with it. Those are some of my favorite scenes with
the homages.
Arm.
There were some that were over the top, but there were some that were like, oh, wow, that's really, I feel like I'm watching Alien again.
It's a
that
little bit
scene
Alien.
With the scene with Alien with the,
oh my goodness,
something happens with one of the characters and you're like, wow, very striking resemblance.
So, cinematography was good. You know, I don't remember a single thing about the soundtrack, the score, or the sound effects, other than maybe a couple weird sound effects.
I remember a roar.
There's a roar. Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to touch on any of the editing or
but again we're not
like
comparing
that,
this to the Dunkirks and the Darkest Hours, because that's not where this movie is. This is a movie event that was a beloved entity, part of this, I guess, trilogy now, or universe, however you want to define it.
Right. I mean, the performances, Oyelowo has a scene,
very strong cast, strong performances.
Mbatha Ra has some really good scenes.
These are
I mean,
not characters
terrific.
With a lot of depth to them. And
no.
These guys were just acting their asses
great
off.
Great, I mean, yeah, great actors. I know a lot of critics who've been praising them up and down. Daniel Brühl's very good. DeBecky, she is tall and she is imposing when she wants to be.
How hard do you think she had to act to be tall?
Not that, but she, to be imposing.
No, I'm busting your balls, but yeah, she does her. She and the. I don't know, you want to call it carbon copy Tilda Swinton comparison?
Her Tilda Swinton
is right on.
is terrific, yeah. Especially with the haircut.
Yes.
You know, the recent haircut.
Yes.
She looks great with it. And yeah, she's just Tilda Swinton pulling off that do we like her or do we not character? Which way we're going to go with it?
I actually thought that was too heavy-handed. They get, well, we'll get into it in spoilers, but I had an issue with that.
Oh, you had an issue with this character.
I'm not falling on the sword for this movie. I'm not. Listen, it wasn't a great movie. I don't think it's as bad as everyone says.
Here's
it
the thing. I think I think even if you haven't seen this movie, I think you'll have some fun listening to us talk about the movie, regardless of whether or not you've seen it. And then you can watch it again and just take enjoyment in the nonsense, because I'm kind of leaning on the side of the fence that this movie's awesomely bad. It is awesomely, horrifically, ridiculously bad. It deserves much more backlash than it's getting. The critics are not harsh enough. I am going to go on one rant after another in spoilers.
Very excited to hear that. I'm very excited. I wish I had popped.
I am popped. Full Red Bull, and it's basically just a list.
It's been a while since you've lost your mind over
it. It's a list. Yeah, I'm going to do silly things. So, and I think that's how bad this movie is, and that's how good we are at podcasting, for me to say that.
Yeah, let's do spoilers then, because like I said, I'm not going to go all out and say this is a great movie. I think there are definitely some rewatchability aspects to it. I think it did some things well. Going to be interesting to see what you will yell at me for.
No, you're not wrong. It delivered goods. Watch it.
Yeah?
We both say watch it, I think. For different reasons, but I think we both say watch it.
All right, let's spoil it then. Spoilers ahead!
This is a spoiler warning.
Spoilers. 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 Spoilers.
You listen to the all too familiar spoiler section music.
Hurry up.
This is a spoiler section for the Cloverfield Paradox. If you don't want to hear about the twists and turns and the plot of the movie, you're in the wrong place. If you want to hear, Mike is literally licking his lips and shaking his head while I'm saying this. If you want to hear about the twists and turns of the movies, you're in the right place. This is the spoiler section for the Cloverfield Paradox. The floor is yours, sir.
So not only is she a reluctant astronaut, which is just the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard of. Maybe she'll take a job. She'll, perhaps. Her and Sandra Bullock.
If she can fit it into her schedule to save the world, she'll
perhaps,
do it.
She'll take the save the world mission, if it's convenient. Christ. But fine. All right. Fine. Moving past that, she has tragedy, soul-crushing, life-changing baggage that she's bringing to space with her on the Save the World mission.
Yes.
And all these guys are catfighting. Again, Louis C.K. mentioned this on Opie and Anthony like 10 years ago or 5 years ago when Gravity came out. It's like, if you listen to a Black Box recording, these are steel-nerved people, like Sully in the movie Sully, Tom Hanks.
Right.
He's just all right, we're going to do this.
They know it's life and death, that. And they've made their peace with it. Yeah.
And then if all these things don't work out and they're facing life and death and they're just like, okay, I'm going to try and I'm going to open up this and I'm going to and that's what it'll end with, Black Box. And it's a horrible thing to say, but that's how it goes. That's how it goes, because these are the creme de la creme of humanity. There's like a million wonderful pilots, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And 0.001% of those steel nerve bastards.
Right.
Like Top Gun, Tom Cruise, he's not allowed in. Right. He's too much of a showboat. Like, these people are the most well-balanced human beings that we have to offer outer space.
Fair point.
So you're not going to send anybody with any baggage. And they're all up there catfighting like nonsense people, like soap opera stars, like they're on the freaking, next season of Big Brother.
Almost as if they're in a movie.
Almost as if they're in a movie. It's just absurd.
Okay. So gripe number one, one of the astronauts reluctantly takes this Earth-saving mission, which isn't realistic enough. I have no problem with that being a gripe.
Oh, it's a story convention. Don't get me wrong.
But
they did the same thing in Armageddon. But Armageddon at least kind of cornered the market on, we need the best drill team in the world, the oil drill team, because we got to drill into this giant.
I believe this is your Ben Affleck.
Asteroid.
So they get up there. They're on the Shepard, which again is the name of the space station. They are trying to harvest for energy in this particle, running these tests over the time that they're up in space. They finally get it to work. Stuff starts going wrong.
A lot of stuff goes
wrong. As it does.
So they're testing the Tesseract, or whatever the hell that thing is.
Sure.
and it goes wrong. It blasts them across the galaxy, literally.
They don't know if they blew up Earth or if they're on the other side of the galaxy.
Which is cool, by the way, you know, to think about. All right, they got through this black hole
sure,
or whatever.
It's terrifying.
It's terrifying. It's great. It's a great premise right there. And I don't know. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that they have the guy on the TV giving the pundit interview.
Yes, that was odd. They have a fully working cable television up there.
But why listen to that interview with some random kooky bookmaker who's like, this is going to bring down monsters.
Yeah, who's by the way, this particle might bring demons.
Shoo's coming. Yeah. Look out, everyone. Yeah. All right. I mean, of course.
It's like the guy from the History Channel with the hair. It's like, aliens.
I mean, the way the news industry's going, maybe right. This does happen.
It's a documentary.
50 years from now, he's considered like, you know.
The prophet.
He's considered, yeah, a reliable source. So, yeah, that's what's happening. And the Russian guy who picks a fight with the German guy because their countries are going to war, right?
Back on the space station.
Yeah, the Russian guy starts to look at himself in the mirror and starts to... something's wrong with his physical person.
Yes.
So somehow, after they figure out that they are nowhere near the Earth, they've lost the Earth.
Correct.
This guy starts to poke at his eye, and that's the greatest scene of the movie, my favorite scene of the movie, where his eye goes the opposite way.
One of his eyes starts going in every direction while he's literally staring at himself in the mirror, yes.
So it's bizarre, and he realizes there's a worm in his head?
Didn't get the, yeah.
Because
weird
the worm,
shit.
He throws up all the worms, alien style,
that's the
right?
Alien scene, yes. He's on basically his deathbed in this room, and he ends up exploding worms from himself.
So they lost their compass now. They don't know where they are. They just know they're away from the Earth. The Tesseract, this or whatever the fuck the compass is.
Ridiculous.
It's like this Rubik's Cube compass.
I can't defend any of this.
Why is the compass... All right, wait. All right, so why is the compass lost, number one? So the ship just like goes poof. Compass gone.
Okay, well, he's in a different timeline.
Where's the compass?
He ate a small compass as a child in that timeline.
So, the other guy, Odode, is leaning up against the wall of the spacecraft, right?
Yes.
I don't know if this is before or after the lady in the wall appears, but he's leaning into the wall.
After.
It's after the... So, yes, they hear like someone going...
Yeah. After the jump, Tilda Swinton is found in the walls randomly.
Tilda Swinton is in the wall, Elizabeth Debicki, and she's got like all the gears through her arms
through
and
her,
stuff.
Yes. She made a bad jump. Her quantum leap wasn't well.
It was off by like a hair. So she's got all the...
Hair.
It was off by a hair. Like,
so she's part robot now.
She was... Yeah, so she's in the wall. Like these two parallel universes were off by 3 feet.
Yes.
That's what we're told. Because she was probably just, you know, walking down the hall. Why does she go from, you know, walking down the hall like, into the wall
like
of the other ship?
She's about to eat a sandwich, and then the next minute she's I'm a monster!
But why didn't they all cross over? Why didn't more people cross over?
I think you're asking too many questions.
It's a great question.
And
it makes me happy to ask this question because it's pretty awesomely bad.
I think you need to just accept things as they are in this universe. Because then you asking about like the problem every movie has with any jump in time, like why Looper can't make sense, and we both enjoyed Looper, but it can't make sense.
Listen, Looper's problems aren't even close, because all I want to say is Marty McFly leaves a sports betting book where a guy named Biff can come upon this,
yes,
and it creates a dystopia.
Yes.
All right. In this other dimension, you're supposed to have monsters. Monsters the size of these things that reach above the clouds, which we're going to get to. Chulu and the Lovecraftians are just, you know, jizzing their pants over this. And we have monsters, and he mentions monsters all throughout history to go on all other timelines. So, number one, how does that, you know, equate to equal universes where they're only 3 feet off?
Okay, so, yes, and we don't get the full story of how these monsters come to be, other than there being a rift in time.
You're right, we get most of... No, we get none of that story,
just
none!
Just wait. That's where the deception from the preview comes in, because this is not an origin story like everyone thought. Go ahead, I'll wait to make my points. Go ahead, keep going.
Okay, Now, I'm not angry at any of this.
You sound great.
It's tickling my fancy that all this is happening.
You sound like you're being tickled, actually.
It's ticklish. I'm ticklish. So, the Russian dude with the crazy eye who's controlled by the worms.
You sound like a hooker just robbed you.
Pukes up all the worms.
Yes.
And dies. So, it's an awesome delivering of the goods of a sci-fi alien Evil Dead scene, right? So, he's dead. He's in a body bag.
The Evil Dead scene comes with O'Dowd.
O'Dowd leans up against the wall because he's fixing shit with this cool goo, this cool future goo, which is sci-fi fix.
All
it's
about
giving
future
me
goo.
My sci-fi
I want
future fix.
Goo in my desktop.
Oh,
right
it's
now.
A fix-it goo.
Yeah.
He's just like he puts the goo on
Billy
it.
Billy Mays here with another fantastic goo.
And then he just clicks his little iPod, and the iPod's like fix it or
phone. Yeah, no, that's how the future's gonna be.
That's how the future is. So the goo is just controlled by the little tablet or whatever. And it was awesome.
Make me a shed.
But he leans up against the wall, and the wall pulls him in,
you
pulls
just
his
gave
arm
me
in.
The most seductive look I've ever seen you give anything living or sandwich.
That's a great analogy. And I doubt that, but.
Yes, he loses his arm by this transparency goo, kind of sucks him in, takes his limb from him. This is your Evil Dead moment, yes.
Okay, so Evil Dead. Later on, the arm comes out, trying to write something.
The arm is found in a hallway. It has become a life force of its own, crawling like the hand in the Addams Family. And they trap it, and it wants to write
and
a message
like,
to them.
And he's like, oh my God, the arm's trying to write something
now
because
look,
he could tell.
Now look. I know the jumps and conclusions and coincidences we both hate. And yes, there are far too many in this story. But there have to be. There have to be to pull off this full story.
I just want to know what drugs these guys are on when they wrote this thing.
But I think I think this is the answer. I think the purpose of the movie is not it's not the stare he's giving me. I think the purpose of the movie is not the movie itself. So if you take this movie in a vacuum and just view it as a movie, yes, these are glaring problems that prevent this from being borderline unwatchable.
I don't know who you are.
Keep going.
Chain of causality. Yes. The chain of causality is guy leans up against the wall. Wall sucks him in, takes his arm. Okay, arm crawling along the ground has a secret message for the crew. And the secret message is the compass that was lost earlier is now in the dead guy who puked up the worm's stomach.
Ate a small compass as a child, yes. It has grown.
Why is it in his stomach?
I don't have an answer for that.
Because what happened to it? Because obviously when you jump through space-time, it's going to scramble everything up and it's going to, a couple things are going
to
move.
I mean,
a couple
to be
things.
Fair, have you ever jumped through space? Time? How do you know that doesn't happen?
And arms develop personalities that have the exact.
My left
know,
arm has seen some things, my friend.
That will tell the secret that will unlock the rest of the plot, those secret arms.
Okay, so we have that happen. This arm, it becomes animated, delivers the message that they got to cut open the dead Russian guy to find their compass. They find their compass. They end up making a jump back to a timeline that they think is regular. Now we're dealing with the tragedy of A, our main character Hamilton has discovered that in one of the timelines that she's not originally in, her kids and husband are still alive and
I like this. So she's tempted by the other dimension because she can be with her kids. Yeah, that's good. That's juicy. Yeah. That works. Even though she shouldn't be in space with that timeline because she's obviously compromised.
Mental problems.
She's compromised by the off chance that she'll go to space.
But everybody
break
else was at war. She was the only astronaut available.
And find her other self in the other dimension.
So she's making that
somehow survived all the monsters for those thousands of years.
Making that inner, which they're like playing with each other and frolicking, even though monsters, whatever. She's having that inner struggle of going down and herself joining the family that's still intact, including another version of her that already exists in this timeline. So staying behind and joining this family. The other subplot.
One line of dialogue tells her not to do it, and she doesn't do it.
Again.
By the girl that may or may not be her nemesis
in the
movie.
Which is the subplot, the other subplot going on.
It's a subplot that takes place in three lines of dialogue, because the evil Tilda Swinton.
Evil Tilda Swinton turns out is evil.
And she's the, but then but again, she wants she's to do, trying to save yeah. the 8 billion people right. in her dimension.
Yes. For and what that includes for killing
how
these,
is she yeah. trying to do? So by killing everybody in this dimension, okay. she's saving her dimension can I
have,
some way.
Can I have one complaint about this movie?
You get one. Only one.
Okay. Thank you, sir. The minute we meet evil Tilda Swinton, she is given so much deference, and anything she says, don't trust this character. And this woman that was found in the walls with wires protruding through her as part of the spacecraft, everyone's like, oh, she said we can't trust you. We can't trust you.
Shrieking like a monster, yeah, yeah. by the way.
Robot lady said, you're no good. So guy that went up in space, the outer regions of the Earth and world with me, you can't be trusted because Tilda Swinton lookalike says you can't from another dimension. That's the whole problem. That's how the distrust is placed in this movie. Yes, that is a big problem.
And yet, the distrusted Tilda Swinton is the one to convince our protagonist not to go to the other dimension.
You love talking about agency. She has given way too much influence, agency, whatever you want to call it.
I just don't understand what she's going for. It doesn't make any sense.
It's also not explained how killing this crew saves the Earth.
Saves the other Earth, right?
Yeah. Saves anything.
Saves anything. We don't know. It's why it's brilliant. It's brilliantly bad. This is almost getting Tommy Wiseau-like right here, other than the performances.
So, yes, she turns on the crew, which we see coming from a decade away. And the decision is made to return to Earth where monsters are.
Number one, well, they have to do something out on the deck to save the...
They got to release vents and air filtering.
So half the ship blows off.
All the mechanics of this are
those
bullshit.
Scenes are terrible.
I love those scenes.
Those are the worst scenes.
It's so good.
Why does Zhang Ziyi have to die? And by the way, Daniel Brühl, like her, the love of his life. Number one, astronauts again.
I can't fucking wait until we get to grades.
So the love of his life dies in one scene, and they mention
that's the
your
lost.
Girlfriend.
Yes, that's the lost.
And it's a cool thing where she gets and she's frozen with all the water for whatever reason. One of the pods or one of the wherever
because
she is,
they
it floods.
Blast it open. Yeah, the flooding is not explained, but the pod breaks.
That's
open.
Cool. It's
Earth
again,
freezes immediately, or her she
very,
freezes.
Very very cool. Okay.
I am so
there's
flustered.
No, there is no ramifications of that for the rest of the movie. You don't
you're
see
totally
him.
Right.
You
you're
don't
totally
see
right.
him like torn up. You don't. He doesn't have like a reaction.
You're totally
to
right.
He's just like, all right, let me help the protagonist the rest of the way. I'm gonna soldier on. My girlfriend, who's the representative,
just froze to death in deep space in front of me.
What are we doing?
Well, win some, lose some.
Win some, lose some. Not going to have a scene to react to it.
Going to have to jump back to a different timeline, find a new girl.
I'm just going to have to help David Oyelowo to be heroic, which happens, which is great. He somehow makes his ship able to travel across the galaxy back again. Okay. Oh, now they can, you know, communicate with other Earth with the new compass
they
again,
end up
right,
landing
too.
In other Earth, so we find that other Earth is now the timeline that Cloverfield is taking place on because we see the Cloverfield monster.
Now, they're computers somehow recorded like all the data of what they were able to do in breaking the space-time.
Listen,
okay,
I can suspend my disbelief and say this is a decent movie for so long, but you want to get into machinations of computer and software
so here's
problems
something else.
Through dimensions, I lose it.
So here's something else. So Gugu's talking to her other self. She's talking to other Gugu, and she's telling this woman...
Oh, this is my big problem with movie screens I have. Yeah, go ahead.
Here's everything that will save your entire race of humanity. All the documentation.
Yes.
But... before you do that,
uh-huh.
you go home and you hug those kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You be with those children. She literally says that.
Yeah. Okay.
Or save the human race.
There's a little more to it than that. Because she is, we find out throughout the movie, she's the one responsible for her kids having died in her first timeline that she's in. Because she was harvesting energy when she shouldn't have been from her neighbors or wherever. And the house ended up exploding. Everybody dies in fires these right. days, by the way. The guy from This Is Us, Manchester by the Sea. That's like the big go-to.
How about you
kids
give
dying in a fire.
The most important information text in the history of ever. And you give that to the people who can do something with it. And then you say, yeah, oh, on the off chance, honey, that this power cell explodes, do what you got to do. Or you could do both
Mike.
At once. Or you could do both at once.
Mike, if you got a recording from yourself
other
that
self.
Knows other dimensions exist, and you have the knowledge you have right now about the world as it is, what would you do with that recording? would you immediately go do what the recording says, or would you say, which one of my jackass friends is playing a joke on me?
Yeah, again, she doesn't even, you know, validate herself either. Yeah, so it's a colossal, never-ending pile of dumbness, but it might be great because here's the kicker, and the finale is wonderful. So they're going down to Earth, mm-hmm. and we've seen Cloverfield 1. We've seen that monster, as imposing as it is, along the ground, battling the tanks, battling the planes.
We only get one kind of money shot at the end of Cloverfield 1 of it.
Kind of scary.
Facial of it, yes.
Kind of scary, going after, you know, getting hit with all those missiles.
Helicopters look tiny.
The helicopters look tiny, but it's about half the size a skyscraper. Maybe a third of the size of
big
a skyscraper.
Big monster, not a giant monster, yeah.
So this we got the thing coming down,
the space,
the little pod coming down to Earth, you know, probably tens of thousands of feet up above mm-hmm. the clouds, mm-hmm. and we get a monster head coming out going rawr.
Giant. This thing, if this thing is drawn to scale, that means that this monster is 40,000 feet.
Yeah, I mean, it's like the super duper kaiju.
Yeah.
You know, it's just a ridiculous kaiju. It's not the, so that's supposed to be the monsters that we're dealing with now? Game over, man.
Wait a minute. Are you trying to tell me one of the problems you had with this movie is that the fantastic monster is too big?
Too big. It's too big.
What are you talking about?
It's super
duper. It's a monster!
It's way too big. We saw the monster in the first movie.
It's not gonna fucking, like, play center for the Celtics. It's a monster. It is literally a creature of imagination.
They describe the rules of the first movie.
Do you
movie.
Have more problems with this monster size or with...
You finally found a hill you're willing to stand on.
Do you have
here.
A problem with this monster size or Shape of Water monster dancing around in a bathtub that becomes an aquarium?
Oh, this monster size.
Really?
Yeah, because they set up the dancing monster. The dancing merman, number one, is just a delight. I don't care what you say. I've rewatched it. It's just a delight. So hold your tongue. This monster just is all right. You know what would be cool shot to have? Let's have this monster come up over the clouds.
But
like Cheech and Chong wrote this.
Of course.
Let's have this guy whose eyes go crazy, puke up worms. Let's have the causality of the we have this compass, right?
We swore to ourselves we were going to keep this episode under an hour.
You know, remember how I hid your coffee cup, man?
We blew past
that. I hid your coffee cup. Up and it was great.
I'm so sorry.
Let's just take the Tesseract. Let's hide it inside the dead guy's stomach. Yeah.
Okay. Let me tell you what I liked about this
Who
movie.
Fucking wrote this
Let
movie?
Let me tell you what I liked about it. If you take this movie in a vacuum, which for those who may not know what I'm talking about as I stare across the table, if you take this movie as a Netflix movie, as if it was a movie you're going to go see in theaters.
Double standards.
Then fine. Yes, it's got its glaring plot holes. What I appreciated that this movie did.
But there's not glaring plot holes. There's a glaring lack of a plot that makes any sense in the realm of humanity, reality. The severed arm tells him the secret of the movie.
You Mike. Say runny nose. I say black plague. All right.
The severed arm at the wall.
You can call it.
The wall took from this. Him, which doesn't hurt, by the way.
You can call this whatever you want. Okay. What I appreciate that this movie does is it establishes more about the universe of Cloverfield than we've known.
It asks 1,000,000,000,000 questions about
yes.
this.
I have
now we have super duper kaiju.
It asks a billion questions more than it has answers.
I mean, they set up like, oh, there's sea monsters. Oh, there's demons. Oh, there's like that's supposed to explain all this stuff.
But it provides an
stuff.
Actual framework within the Cloverfield movie's work, which is a bizarre thing for a third film in a franchise to do. But we don't really know much about the Cloverfield universe except that there's big monsters and crazy people that live in the world.
I mean, the last one kind of gave a clear plot impetus. You know, I don't want to say what it was.
Right.
But we get
You're not
what's
wrong.
Going on.
You're not wrong. But this one, we now know there's 8 billion people in the world. They've been trying to harvest energy. The energy that people are exposed to and have is so low that it's the world is on the verge of war. We know the universe a little more. We know details going on.
We get a little more detail.
That can lead to this, that can provide for a how did this happen.
And then we get the fucking batshit plot line of all batshit plot lines, this, which makes it, might make it more fun. I'm not angry saying this, any of this.
Don't view this as the Cloverfield whatever paradox. View this as Deathly Hallows Part 1. This is a setup movie. This isn't a movie in and of itself. This is a setup movie for better things to come down the road. This is paving the way for the trucks of with the meat of the story to navigate through and bring the goods. That's what this movie is. This is how I see this movie.
That's what you hope this movie is. And I hope you're right.
This movie has to be.
Better be.
It can't be anything else.
Better be. Super kaiju arms that have
I have to believe have in the right things. So, yes, I do hope, but I think that's what this movie is. And because it does a lot of world building at the sake of having a coherent plot, and it, because it shows you that, okay, now we're in a world where parallel universes exist, where people can time jump.
Here's the most interesting story about this movie. The cast getting this script and saying, I want to do, like, what cult did they all join? Like, J.J.
Bad
Abrams?
Robot, yeah.
Did they just basically say, all right, we want to work with J.J. Yes. Abrams, even on
they
the
saw,
fringe?
They saw Bad Robot, oh, and they God. Said,
well, then they
did.
Deserve what they get here.
But give me a grade. What's your grade for this movie?
It's either an F- or an A+. I don't know. It's probably somewhere around a C. It's yeah, because it's, like, that. Enjoyably bad.
It is enjoyably bad, yes. I think there's more merit to it than you seem to. If you were to give it a serious grade, that's not an F minus or an A plus.
It's like a C or a C plus. So you're taking the average. And that's probably what it is.
You're sitting on a fence and taking the easy way out. That's fine.
It's not a good movie, Mike. It's not. I mean, his thing, like, I can do mental gymnastics to like it because I like the other two movies.
I'm a C plus B minus. I'm not saying it's a great piece of artwork. It's probably like a 78, 79 for me. It's, I mean, look, I appreciate, I don't want, I'm also enraptured and in love with the way it was marketed and done. Here's the big question from all of this, now that we both know it's not a great movie.
Surprise! Here's a crab burger. Burger made with crap.
Is there a downside to a movie being marketed or released or promoted or whatever you want to call it in this way if it's known by the studio that it might be an underwhelming movie? Is there a downside to this happening with an underwhelming picture?
Two things scare me. Number one, Netflix doesn't have the taste I hoped they would have. Because,
wow.
Because this is rough.
Cancel Mike's Netflix.
this is, I mean, here's the thing. Or they're devious in the sense of, all right, here's, I mean, they're doing the best they can for their product.
They got headlines, though.
They got headlines.
They definitely
got
headlines.
But they gave us
this.
A piece of crap movie.
Oh.
It's bad.
Wow.
I mean, it's...
Sound like
again,
me talking about Roman J. Israel.
Honestly, it's kind of enjoyable. I don't know. It's, I mean, it's
are you in
things,
parallel universes?
I'm in parallel universes because I'm torn because I kind of liked this bad experience. It's a bad movie. It's a universally shat upon movie by all the critics. We get it.
Is it shat upon because of the belovedness of its two predecessors?
Mike... I think I was pretty clear in the causality of this film. Listen, we have nitpicked. Think about the other problems we've had with causality, like Mudbound. Yeah. Think about,
well, this is not those.
If these were potatoes, those would be smart ones. And these would be just like the giant potato contest.
The plant.
This would be like a glacier
those
of potatoes.
Tiny potatoes. And this would be a decade-long drought.
The arm, famine. For some reason, does things. So, yeah, I mean, these are some... These are just a lack of plot, causality,
I think your eyes just went
reality.
The way of that character.
Oh, my God. Yeah. So, give me a break.
So, putting a bow on this episode, calmly. That's the Cloverfield Paradox. It's the third movie It's, God willing, I cross my fingers, a setup movie.
It does turn my opinion into a paradox, because it might be awesomely bad. It's a perfect title.
Yeah, you have to see it for yourself and make your own judgment. Because, again, it's never
been... You can listen to us and make a judgment here. You don't have to watch this. Like, if you like D-horror movies and you go back and listen to us or whatever, you like this movie because it's kind of ridiculous. Or you could just listen to us and take our word for this one.
So we'll see what this means for the future of marketing and the future of the Cloverfield franchise, the future of Netflix. That's all we got for this one. We're going straight on back to the putting our noses in the air and being the film snobs about it, as we are going to dissect the big seven categories from now on.
Here, here.
For the Oscars. And we're not sprinting anymore, but I don't know what we're doing. Shot putting?
Shot putting, yes. Hammer throwing.
We're hammer throwing these categories. And our first category that we dive deep into later this week will be the Best Supporting Actor category, followed by the Lead Actress one soon after. That's what we're going forward with. And we're going to, what you can expect from those episodes, we've already told you a little bit, but we're going to dive in, give you a little preview of why every nominee should and shouldn't win. We'll perfect perfection with them in our own rankings, but our actual predictions as to what will happen will come in a future episode.
We'll begin by telling you of the nominees who should win.
Yes.
Then we'll talk to you about who we think will win in our prediction pod, and then we'll tell you who should have been nominated and win out of that pile.
When we give you our Mike and Oscars,
yes.
So until then, listen. Cloverfield, the paradox, the clover, whatever, pox.
And I've gone cross-eyed.
No, it's just one eye. Tell us what you thought. Tell us your thoughts. Did you watch this? Did the marketing idea get you hyped? Are you excited for another Cloverfield movie? Have you stopped talking to your family because of this one?
I might be excited for another Cloverfield movie because it's just nuts.
We're Mike, and Oscar on Facebook. Mike, and Oscar. I don't even know on what. On Instagram, we're MMO_pod on Twitter, MikeMikeAndOscar@gmail.com, MikeMikeAndOscar on Reddit. We're everywhere. Reach out to us, let us know, and we hope you guys enjoyed this this ride we took.
This was a ride. It started out bumpy, and it ended
bumpy.
In an explosion, jumping us with across a giant the skyscraper monster. Like The Rock with a giant monster, yeah.
Nuts. Back to Oscars next time. We'll see you guys.
Yeah.